You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz, the 23rd of April. Game 3, the Jazz were brilliant, Rubio amazing, and the Thunder weren't. What's to look ahead to the Game 4 and a look around NBA 5? It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. As I'm sure you can hear, I'm being struck by allergies, which happens every time this year. It's always a little bit of a challenge when we make the playoffs, so the challenge is hit. I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you expertise, insight, geeky numbers, and a look behind the curtains. All right, let's get into it. Game 1. By the way, tickets, I believe there might be still some left. At UtahJazz.com or season tickets for next year are available. Tell them Locked On Jazz sent you. All right, Rubio was brilliant and obviously had an incredible day from the mid-range. The Jazz overall as a team went 9 of 11 on mid-range shots, which is probably not the most sustainable item we could ever have, but it was pretty great to see Rubio have that day. One story that I think has been kind of forgotten that makes that day even better is Joe Ingles and Rubio were together in Barcelona. At the time, Rubio was the young Justin Bieber phenomena. Everywhere he went, you know, yelling, screaming, rock star. Joe had signed with Barcelona because, as he describes it, like that's like being offered a deal from the Yankees. You got to take it. Turned out to be a terrible experience for him. Turned out to be kind of the low point of his career in which he considered quitting the game, wasn't enjoying it at all. Marcelo Huertas was one of his veteran teammates at the time and really helped him out a great amount and got him through that period. But it's pretty cool to have Ricky and Joe sharing these moments. You know, they go back quite a bit and have a pretty good backstory there as well. But back to the game. So Rubio goes 5 of 5 on mid-range jumpers. He goes just 2 of 9 on long threes. He's just 3 of 5. Sorry, there's going to be some hot tea drinking today. I'm trying to just clear the allergy junk out of the throat. He's only 3 of 16. On above-the-break threes during the series. But he has been great the second quarter in Game 2 and then early in Game 1 and just conducting the team, understanding exactly what the Thunder are doing defensively, reacting to their adjustments on the fly. Really, a point guard performance, which happened to have a bunch of points scored also. But just a brilliant outing by Rubio. Still not shooting great in the series, by the way. Like it's funny how you look, and he's actually still only shooting 39% in the series. But he had that singular great game in Game 3 that helped the Jazz win. Jazz had 9 assists on their first 9 field goals. Watching the game over again, and I did an extensive thread on that, is... Sorry, is, and I haven't worked any of this stuff through. I just woke up, did my yoga, came over here. These are the first words I've spoken. I was struck by allergies all day yesterday, though. Woo. So we'll see. But anyway, the Thunder were bad. The Jazz were good, but the Thunder were bad. I don't know that they are necessarily about to be good. Some of the areas where they were bad, one, they don't complete defensive possessions. So when the Jazz start running through their stuff, when Westbrook's released from the immediate play, he just stops playing. And when Paul George does the same thing, they don't finish through defensive plays at all. So the Jazz keep working possessions and are having, I think, more and more success as the possessions go on. The second one is offensively, they just When they run stuff, it's pretty good. Honestly, they just don't do it a lot. And as the series is going on, the limited stuff that they do run, the Jazz are reacting to really, really well. But they weren't very good. I don't know what their next level of good is, quite honestly. I think that's going to be a really interesting part to the rest of the series. My take on the series the entire time is I didn't think it'd be close. I thought one of the two narratives would kick in. Either ball movement, team-based, defensive prowess overwhelms stars, or stars overwhelm lesser unique talent. Thus far, and if game three is any indicator, it might not be close, but in the Jazz' favor. We'll see. The other thing that's interesting is when the Thunder, it's not happening very often, but when the Jazz are able to keep the Thunder late in the clock, they're struggling. And that's, you know, vital for the Jazz success. The Thunder do not do it very often, though, to their credit. They are playing early in shot clock, getting their shots off early, and that's who they are. They have avoided getting late and deep in shot clocks against the Jazz. Westbrook particularly is struggling late and deep in shot clocks. The Jazz, on the other hand, in the bottom 7 seconds of shot clock, have an effective field goal percentage that's pretty good. The last 4 seconds is not. They've been stymied a few times. They're 33. At 4-7, where they've really worked the clock, the Jazz effective field goal percentage is 52%. And in the middle of the clock, the Jazz effective field goal percentage is 59%. From 7 to 15 on the clock. So as the Jazz work offensive possessions, the Thunder defense gets less good. I really can't emphasize enough that the Thunder were not good in Game 3. And what I don't know is if they have that next note of how they're going to get things done. The Jazz were getting, early in the game, the Thunder's adjustment seemed to be to overshift more aggressively, trying to force turnovers, take away the roll guy. And the Jazz just read it perfectly. The Jazz just absolutely read it perfectly. Nailed, got three straight corner threes. And then from there, timeout Billy Donovan comes out of the timeout and Ricky Rubio hits Derek Favors and Rudy Gobert on rolls on the next two possessions. Which, you know, if you're...
The playoffs are here.
Whoa, sorry about that. Which if you're these guys, you got to be wondering, like, what do we have? Like, they're doing everything at us. Every single time we make an adjustment, they have the answer. That's how beautifully prepared they are right now. Quinn's got them as stunningly well prepared. One of the things I thought was important was Gobert switching onto Westbrook and George throughout game three and getting stops. These guys ended up all taking, you know, long twos, step back threes, and not hitting. And that's the fact that Quinn has that option in his bag to switch that if he needs to with Gobert is a big, big addition. Let's dig a little bit more into Westbrook's silly comments, how bad he's been, and some more parts to looking ahead to game four. Today's show brought to you by Murdoch Chevy. Saw Tyson at the game sitting in their seats. Tyson runs Murdoch Chevy. The Murdoch family has been in the car business in Utah for 91 years, as you might have heard. Tyson actually has not been there for all of them. But Tyson runs with that Murdoch signature, the Chevy dealership out in Woods Cross. Chevy's rolling. Chevy's got the only truck line with all three truck segments, the heavy-duty Silverado, the light-duty half-trunk Silverado, the mid-size truck Colorado, Colorado Diesel, unibody frame, which is safer. And then you have what Tyson and the Murdochs are all about. Good, solid people giving you the Murdoch guarantee. Been in business here, interacting with Utah for 91 years. Kind of part of the heart and soul of everything that's going on with the Chevy brand as well as the Murdoch family. Go check it out at Woods Cross and visit Tyson. Tell him I say hi. He'll talk some Jazz basketball with you. As he was all fired up, he and his wife going nuts in their seats the other night as the Jazz pulled off the big Game 3 win. Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross. Also, today's show brought to you by InterCap Lending. InterCap is a 40-year-old mortgage company. Came to Utah in April of 2016. Josh Romney brought them to Utah. And they're interesting because they're a direct lender, so therefore no additional requirements. They can take care of difficult loans, low credit, self-employed, business assets, multiple properties. If you take a look, have them take a look at your loan. Because, one, Steve Carter was amazing for me and got our refi done during the season, which to me is like, you know, I'm going to send him to deal with Middle East peace next. 385-885-28. That's 385-885-28. Their goal is to make getting a mortgage as easy as it is to order a pizza. They've done it with the app, InterCap Lending in the App Store. Start you off, take all the pictures of your documents, send them out that way. Makes it a lot easier. And then they do just a wonderful job. So if you have low credit, self-employed, business assets, multiple properties, let them take a look at their loan and see what they can do. Steve Carter, 385-885-28, InterCap Lending, NMLS 190465. For more information, visit intercaplending.com. My voice is not getting better. I sound like I'm kind of deep and I got this big husky voice. Never had this before. Maybe it'll be the greatest broadcast of my life. So Westbrook says he's not going to let this beep happen again. I watched the game. I don't know what that is. Like, so does that mean Westbrook's going to go get up on Rubio and bother him at 35 feet and hassle him? And then Rubio's got to make sure he just doesn't get the ball stripped and taken away, and Westbrook's on a one-man, selfish defensive assignment? Because frankly, from a Jazz standpoint, Rubio's still probably the last guy we want to have to take a shot. Maybe other than a favors corner three. So you go get up on Rubio, take him away, he moves the ball, you're over committing to Rubio. Does that get Gobert at the rim, favors at the rim, Ingles open? Does it help Donovan Mitchell? Be curious to see what he means by this. I watch Rubio's buckets. He pump fakes Westbrook out of the building after missing a three. Pulls into a mid-range shot. Misses a three, gets his own rebound. Westbrook runs by, hits it. I mean, I think the only thing, Westbrook just does not have a level of detail to his defensive performance. And it kind of goes back to where I started it, that they don't hold through entire defensive possessions. And so maybe you're going to see Westbrook with a higher level of intensity fighting through defensive possessions more. But frankly, when you look at what they do defensively, I don't know how he comes out and decides that he's going to stop this. I mean, frankly, Rubio's probably not going to go 5 of 5 for the mid-range, and the Jazz aren't going to go 9 of 11 for the mid-range. That's the most likely. The Westbrook, on the first 18 seconds of the shot clock, is 9 of 19. Before 15 on the shot clock, he's 15 of 33. After 15 on the shot clock, he's 7 of 26. Shots outside 10 feet with a defender within 4 feet, he's 4 of 17. So when Gobert's on the floor, he's not getting to the rim with his usual impact. He's becoming a mid-range shooter. He's not doing it very well. That's his real frustration. The other one is the Thunder didn't get out and run. They only had 4 fast break points in Game 3, second fewest they've had all year. equaling what they had against the Jazz on 12-23. The Thunder are 7-10 when they have under 10 fast break points. The other one that's interesting is Thunder grabbed 27% of all offensive rebounds, which is a huge part of their offense. They did not, they've had 21%, 20%, and 15%. They're 11 and 12 this year when offensive rebounding rate is below 21% and 2 and 8 versus playoff teams. So, sorry. So they need offensive rebounding. The other problem they have, though, is when Adams is on the floor, they're not as good right now. He leaves Gobert near the rim, so they're getting... They shoot 10 percentage points less well at the rim when Adams is on the floor. And they get 5% fewer shots in the restricted area and take 12% more shots in the mid-range. Furthermore, when Adams is on the floor and they play their usual defense, the Jazz are getting corner threes. They're 10 of 17 on corner threes. So that's quite a quandary for the Thunder, that they've got an offensive rebound to be successful, and yet when they spread the floor without Adams right now, they're able to get to the rim and do some things that they can't do otherwise when Adams is on the floor. Tonight's going to be interesting. It still kind of sits to the same topic we've had the whole time. The Jazz systems are working. We opened the series and said the Jazz would be able to get looks. They're getting better and better and better looks as the series goes on. Now the question is, do the Thunder have some level of just intensity where they can go get the Jazz? The other one that I think you have to keep an eye on is a letdown by the Jazz. I know that sounds crazy, but the energy was so incredible in that arena in Game 3. I don't think it can be the same for Game 4. And so there's got to be a little bit of a drop in kind of how the intensity level that the Jazz play with, and, you know, what does that do? Paul George, by the way, has just been incredible. Paul George is 29 of his last 54 on above-the-break threes, including the last three games of regulation. He's coming on that pick and roll, snaking back underneath it, stepping back behind the three-point line, going to his left, hitting the three. It's fabulous. Jazz have shaded him to his right hand. He's figured it out by going off the pick to his right and then coming back to his left. That's the play that's working. They have another offensive set with Adams that's pretty good, where they run an early pick with a Brewer, George, and then Westbrook, and then Adams comes with a follow pick on the run, and Westbrook comes off it. Those are the two half-court sets. Here's a really interesting one. The other thing that's working for them is isolation. Their isolation numbers are great other than Westbrook. Paul George is 1.2 points, so is Carmelo. You wonder whether they actually go more isolation. Take us out of our defensive schemes and have us stop playing team defense and force us to play one-on-one defense. This is much better if Adams is off the floor. So that gets back to the quandary for them. Thunder made some good adjustments. In Game 3, we got those corner threes early. We only got one more the rest of the night. So we got them early. Then they widened out their spread, their defense, so that we couldn't get the corner three, but then we started getting plays in the around the rim, and we got 33% offensive rebounding rate. And that's where Quinn's system is great. You take one thing away, and we battle at you and get the next. Thunder mid-range shooting. 5 and 19 in Game 2, 5 of 18 in Game 3. That's probably the key to the series right there. Favors and Gobert on the floor together are plus 19.6. per 100 possessions. Pretty good. I went back and rewatched the entire game. I have a lengthy thread on Locked On Sports. If you want to go find it on Twitter, I also have it on my Locked On Sports Facebook page. I think you would enjoy that. Trying to look at any other notes I might have for you here. I think I've covered just about everything. I mean, I think we'll get looks. We just got to continue to knock them down. I think that's going to be, I would suspect it'll be a close game. I'd be surprised if we blow them out again. But again, I didn't think this series was going to be close. I thought one of the two narratives would win out, and right now it feels as though the Jazz narrative is winning out. That's and obviously that swings. We lose tonight, and suddenly you're on the wrong side of the odds badly. You win tonight. This is huge. And you are. You lose tonight, have to go win 2 out of 3, one of them in their building, even though you've already done it. But I think 80% of the time, the team with the 2 games at home wins that series. So 79%. So that's the level of importance tonight. Should be great. Let's look around the NBA next. Today's show is brought to you in part by my friends over at Slow the Flow. I always give these people such credit. They have taken an item that is super important and made it fun so that now we all think about it. The playoffs are the time to shine, not only for the players and the coaches, but the weather as well. Thus, the allergies. The beginning of the postseason does not mean the beginning of watering season. Most Utahns aren't sure when to begin watering their lawns and start watering way too early. Slow the Flow has the playbook for you to succeed. Visit slowtheflow.org. Find Utah's lawn watering guide. The tool will let you know when and how often you should be watering to maintain a healthy yard. The lawn watering guide is updated every week based on specific needs in your area, so you can be sure to have a winning game plan all spring and all summer long. Not only will following the guide help save Utah water, but also avoid a lot of potential issues like attracting pests and ultimately save you money and time. The truth is Utah's spring and summer is going to be a 7-game series, even if hopefully this one's not. We need everyone to come out and help. Show your pride. Don't begin watering too early. Be a champion of your yard this year. Slow the Flow. Save H2O. All right, let's run around the league. NBA 5. Can we just all have a moment for Manu? Like, how incredible is he? I just love Manu Ginobili. 16 last night. 5 of 10. 3 of 5 from 3. And the Spurs force a game 5. That series is, you know, Klay Thompson had been amazing, and he missed, had a bad night, went 4 of 16. They just, you know, without Steph, they don't have that leeway, but Steph's coming back. So they'll be ready. Pelicans sweep the Blazers. One level stunning, and then until you saw it happening, and then it was clear. The defense of the Blazers, which is so good because they deny corner threes, they're the number one team defending in the paint, and they deny threes overall, had the worst matchup. As good as their paint defense is, Anthony Davis just shot over it. Holiday and Rondo are comfortable in that area. I think they made 11 straight paint shots at one point. And then they're comfortable in the mid-range. So they just absolutely torched them offensively. And on the defensive end, you know, we all know that their 50% of their shots are Lillard and McCollum. So if anything goes wrong or you take one of them out, they become pretty limited. And that's exactly what happened. And there was really, the way the Blazers roster is constructed, there didn't seem to be any real counter that they had. That's what jumped out to me. Washington and Toronto tied at 2. Toronto's fourth quarter play last night brought up every bad demon and thing you could worry about for the Raptors. So their angst level is back all the way up. The last 2 days I've asked a poll question on who the favorite in the East is. And the first day was Saturday night. I asked it. And the answer was 57% Raptors, 30% 76ers, 9% Cleveland, 4% Boston. Last night I asked it, still up there. Now Philadelphia at 39%, Toronto at 36%, Cleveland at 23%. And I think people just don't want to believe in Cleveland. It's a good win for them last night. The 76ers, to me, are Shaq and Penny. The Raptors, if you remember when Shaq and Penny went as young players, the Raptors are the Indiana Pacers team of Reggie Miller, Dale, and Antonio Davis, who never make the finals. And Cleveland is Michael Jordan's team on the year where Michael Jordan comes back and they're just not quite right when he comes back from baseball, wearing 45. That, it feels the exact same to me. And then the Sixers are the team that make it. Pretty incredible. 104-100 last night. Oladipo was off. Victor has to be good. He was 5 of 20. Kyle Korver had a great night last night. He had all the big shots. He had 18. Fun game to watch. Rodney is a shadow. Rodney is just, he's gone. And George Hill didn't play. I don't know what's going on with Rodney, but he played 14 minutes, 6 points, non-impactful. It's sad to see. That series now at 2, and obviously big edge to Cleveland with 2 of the next 3 at home. They may have pulled that up. They're seeming to find a way when they have to, which may be the theme of their whole playoffs, and they may click in. Minnesota got a great win over Houston on Saturday, 121-105. They got efficient performance from Andrew Wiggins. Jimmy Butler's getting into James Harden, and Harden is 9 of 21 the other night after coming off a brutal game, too. Jeff T got into the paint, distributed, got everything done. Milwaukee and Boston are now tied. I don't know that I really think Milwaukee's going to win this series. Jaylen Brown had 34 again. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Terry Rozier, Al Horford. These guys are good. Imagine what Boston's going to be like when they get everybody back, or what internal turmoil they're going to have about who gets the ball. And finally, I think we talked about Philadelphia. All right, so that wraps up. Sorry for the voice today. Hopefully it'll be all right by tonight. Go sit in my cocoon for the rest of the day, go to practice and not say another word and work through it. Should be fun today. Big things to watch. Obviously, whether Westbrook's, what he's doing to Rubio and the impact. Are they really changing anything? Offensively, are they running sets or are they just getting into their one pass and go game? And again, as has been the case all series long, can we keep them to the back half of the shot clock? Which we haven't done a lot, but we have done to Westbrook. Their shooting's a little different. They're taking 3 more percentage of their shots in the mid-range and 3 less percentage of their shots at the rim. And so you got to keep that. All right, should be fun. Look forward to seeing you out there or tuning in. Thanks very much if you do. We're on SiriusXM as the home feed if you're a subscriber to that. Have a great one.